C-168. Number 3B.
In the middle of the 1930s, there was a turning point. Namely, the turning point that really John Dolly began to see that through seeing order, which introduces science, and through handling really the question of matter and evil from the point of view of spirit, that he would, that somehow he was prepared for a spiritual science. And he was seeing something in Mrs. Eddy's writings, namely in Unity of Good, that Mrs. Eddy there explained the difference between really the science of physical harmony, which had to do with matter, with the physical, and the science of spiritual harmony. She says there in 1888, 86, 78, around about that time, she said really that up to that point, the movement was ready for the science of physical harmony, and that she was teaching was the science of physical harmony, the science of healing people, of healing the body. But she said that this is not really what she wants to bring out, and she made that prophecy at that time that in less than another 50 years, his name will be magnified in the apprehension of this new subject of divine science, the science of spiritual harmony. But she said, until then, the platoons of Christian Science must first be thoroughly drilled in the planar manual of their spiritual armament. And he could see those 50 years were over, in the middle of the 30s, that half century was over. He believed in what Mrs. Eddy was prophesying, and he suddenly could see that actually he was fulfilling that prophecy, because what he was doing was not to introduce the science of physical harmony, but the science of spiritual harmony, because he was teaching order, the order of spirit, the order of ideas, and therefore he suddenly realized that that prophecy would be fulfilled. But much more what was impressive is naturally to see that he was really developing the idea of Christian Science in the right way. So at that time, he felt the whole world should know about the 7 days of creation, that that is the beginning of a scientific understanding that would bring all the Christian scientists to be students of a science, instead of just attending Christian Science services and singing hymns. So he felt, this is something I have to shout out into the world. And so he went in 1936 to Boston to the annual meeting and gave a testimony in the Mother Church about the 7 days of creation, how important they are, that that is the way to reality. And that was his last appearance. That did him in. Afterwards, one just could hear the ridicule about it, the slogan that went like this, how to get into heaven in 7 days. And from that moment on, he was in trouble. That was a new paradigm shift. The old paradigm didn't want to accept it and couldn't see it, and the crisis was inevitable. The excommunication was inevitable. That would follow. But still, he was tough enough to see and was loving enough the idea to follow the idea and to stick to the idea and to evolve it as well as he could it. So little by little, other orders of the seven began to come into focus, like that scientific order, that he could see that Mrs. Eddy would use the scientific tools also in that same order, like law, order, rule, system, method, form, and plan or design. So he had the scientific tools to tackle really the science of being found in its scientific order. And when I went through class with him in 37, then he was teaching his brand of the sevenfold order, putting it into ordinary language. The 7 days of creation gave that wonderful order that still seems to be so fundamental for our science, namely that that sevenfold order ran like this. First, there is creative ability. That creative ability unfolds, has unfoldment. That unfoldment brings forth what? Identity, identification. When it is identified and everything else is identified, you can go and classify the identities of being, classification. Then you can use that classification as a method for practice. So we had method, which would bring about the true result or form or gestalt, which finally, that was consciousness, which finally would be that method which would bring us into unity with God. That was the seventh, unity with God. So you had creative ability, unfoldment, identity, classification, individuality in life through the method of life, individualizing, then consciousness and unity with God. That he was teaching in 1937, and I still have that little piece of paper in my pocket, not in this pocket here, but at home, where I put that down. It made a terrific impression. So that it, in the language of the scientists of the world, he would be able to state what I then called, which he never called that way, but what I called then the law of creativity. So at that point, he still was constantly thinking along sevenfold orders without having actually a fundamental order, except perhaps that he always compared everything with the days of creation, but he felt these are various orders of somehow of the same level, of the same importance, but that there must be an underlying order that would be, so to say, the deep structure order of all those surface orders, and actually felt that the capitalized term, the seventh synonymous term for God, would be that order. Until that point, he really didn't quite see that he could prove through the textbook that those seven synonymous terms would form a irresistible order. And so in 1938 and 39, he began with various groups to study really the seven synonymous terms in the textbook. He had various study groups until finally he felt he's ready in the year 38, 39, to do a really deep study on those synonymous terms. I was in that group, so I can speak from experience, and we went through all the references in the textbook on every synonymous term, trying to find out which ideas characterize one of the seven synonymous terms, and we are trying to find out the rules of interpretation in the textbook, because it was quite clear that it is not so easy to analyze those synonymous terms in the textbook. A year before, after I had gone through class and I began to see that the seven synonymous terms were super important, I tried it myself at home in Zurich and made a deep investigation through all the statements. I made a list of ideas, finding then out after a few months that most of those ideas which I found on the mind were also on the spirit and also on the principle or on the life or on the love. And so I nearly would have given up if I wouldn't have had the chance to go to London and take part in the study group. So we had to find out why it is that Mrs. Eddy would state about the power of mind, but also about the power of spirit, the power of principle, the power of life, the power of truth, the power of love. Is then power a characteristic idea, or isn't it? And so we had to find out why it is a characteristic idea of mind and not of spirit and not of principle, not of life and truth and love. So one had first to find out the rules of interpretation. Now, those rules of interpretation you have now in the study aid and on tapes. You know that we that at this point we can give really the rules for that analysis, so that every student that does not believe our findings can go back to the textbook and find it out by himself and see if it's true or if it's not true. Nobody has to take our findings by rote. Yeah, he doesn't have to believe us. Huh? He can find it out by himself. So that was that which occupied Dorley's thought right before World War II, until then. In 1939, for the first time, he gave a class wholly on the basis of the seven synonymous terms. I still can see him, how he came out of the last day out of the class and said, "Hello, Maxie, I did it. I taught the whole class on the seven synonymous terms." So that was the analysis of the seven synonymous terms. Parallel with it went another investigation that Irene Oppenheim, also a good student of John Dorley, did mostly, namely to go through the Bible and see that with every 1,000 years the tonality of the biblical story would change, and that those changes were really the same changes as in the world order, that the first 1,000 years were typical for mind, the second for spirit, and so on. So that he gave the association in 39 on those 1,000-year periods in the Bible. So again, to substantiate really that what he had found in the Christian Science textbook is the same what is underlying really the Bible. So that Bible and textbook are actually built on the same principle. With finding out, really, what are the ideas of each synonymous term, came another little advance in the unfoldment. Namely, one began to see that each idea was not an isolated idea, that power was not just power and that's that, but that every idea blends with every other idea. Because ideas are spiritual, they have no limits, and therefore they blend with all other ideas. And so he began to see that you can take an idea like power and blend it with the ideas of spirit, with the ideas of soul and principle and life, truth and love, which suddenly brought in something new. Namely, by blending these ideas with each other, gave relationship of categories. You blended the ideas of mind, of the category of mind, with the ideas of spirit, which is another category. And so blending categories lead to system. System is the interrelationship of categories. And at that point, something new naturally was born, namely system and science. So up to this point, the main accent was on order, and now that accent shifted to system and science. And a completely new era broke in John Dorley's consciousness, which would be mostly centered on system. Now, what is system? Well, system is defined as a regular interacting or interdependent group of items forming a unified whole. That's interesting. It means that there is an interacting or a relationship of groups of items. If we have the ideas of mind, we have a group of items. If we have ideas of spirit, it's another group of items. And the interacting forms a system, namely a unified whole. And so suddenly that oneness of being, the idea of holism was brought into the study, and he began to see that actually he had to go further than just to state an order, but to see the interrelationship of first of ideas, bringing the first little approach to what one could call a system. So he was about system, he knew was an idea of science, and so also the idea of science that he had to, that he deals now with science and not just with order, came more and more into focus, and that whole association of 1938 was all on understanding really science. That he gave a whole association on this very point to show that that orders lead to system, and that system is an idea of science. At the same time, you see, these things naturally did overlap, they did blend, so one can't say from one day to the next day something changed. There was always a preparatory period that was necessary until finally it clicked and the penny dropped, and then something new came into focus. So there was a preparatory stage already in the middle of the 30s, namely when he began for the first time to sense something about science, because he had a student that that told him that actually he was an optician, and he said, look here, all the terms we use in optics are also in science and health. Science and health tells me all about optics. He had another student who was in music, and she was investigating a textbook according to musical terms, and she came to John Dolly and said, you know, what I find in the textbook is all music. I can see that Mrs. Eddy uses all the terms of music in the textbook, which brought him naturally to the conclusion that he said, my golly, then the textbook is the underlying science of all sciences. And from that moment on, he began to talk about the science of the sciences, that Christian science is a proto-science or a first science, which one also can call it, that is the science of all sciences. Interestingly enough, he didn't know that. I only found it out about 20 or 30 years later, that it was at that very year when he began to see that for the first time in the field of physics, there was an article coming out from a Polish man, as far as I think, or Czech, I don't know quite know, which was speaking about the necessity of a science of all sciences, an underlying science of all sciences. And that is what interests me, to see that when an idea breaks through in one field of knowledge, that it breaks through in other fields of knowledge, because the atmosphere is ripe for it. So that was happening around about the middle of the 30s. And from that point on, he could see, oh, I have to see more about system, and I have to see more about science. And so he was naturally not surprised to find that important statement in the textbook where Mrs. Eddy says, divine metaphysics is now reduced to a system, to a form comprehensible and adapted to the age in which we live. And that Jesus knew that system, and that he built on that system, and that he was healing on the basis of that system. So suddenly system was the big shot here. From order, he changed the accent to system, and was interested, what is that system? At that point he only saw that there must be a system, and that the textbook is presenting a system, but he didn't quite know where it was, just as nobody else would know. But he had that wonderful motherhood sense that with obstetrics and scientific obstetrics, he would work and see that one can give birth to every scientific idea And so in entertaining that scientific obstetric, little by little, without any preconceived notion, little by little, the system began to unfold. How? First of all, he had to see that it has nothing to do with religion. So in 1938, in that association, he brought really out that the Christian Science is not really a religion, that it is a science that has a religious aspect, just as it has a healing aspect, therefore a medical aspect, that it has a governmental aspect, that it is the proto-science of all the other science, that it is the science underlying the science of marriage, and whatever Mrs. Eddy calls a science. So he stressed it very much to show, look here, we must get out of the theological realm of the religious approach. We can't just park the old religious approach to and a sense of Christian Science into that new field of the science of old sciences. Then, as it is, always something begins to click at some time. So while studying still under 7 days of creation, he would read one day in the last day of the days of creation the following that Mrs. Eddy says, the numerals of infinity called 7 days. So he suddenly saw, well, they are only called 7 days, but there aren't 7 days. They are actually numerals of infinity. And so he could see something terrific. He could see these 7 days are only called 7 days. They are not 7 days. They are not really a sequence in time, but underlying that becoming process, that underlying that law of creativity lies an isness law, namely the numerals of infinity that do not need to have a developing sequence, that they are like the numbers in arithmetic. There is no developing sequence from 1 to 2 to 2 to 3 to 4. You can use any number as what it is. You can use the 4 and say, this 4 is not just that which is between the 3 and the 5. That 4 is also, when I take a 12 and divide it by 3, it's still a 4. Or you can take a 7 and detract from it a 3, and you have still a 4. So these are numerals of infinity. They are not numbers that only exist in a becoming, in a developing sequence. They are numerals of infinity. But he could see that Mrs. Eddy went on, namely like this, as he said, the numerals of infinity are only called 7 days and therefore can never be reckoned according to the calendar of time. They have no time sequence. This day will appear as mortality disappears, and they will reveal eternity. Suddenly they are eternity and no more a sequence. So they become numerals of infinity, namely newness of life, in which all sense of error forever disappears, and thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. And thought accepts the divine infinite calculus. Naturally, it nearly overthrew him and could see, well, a calculus has nothing to do whatever with time, has nothing to do with a sequence, but is actually a point of intersection of various categories. And so he was wondering, what on earth is that calculus? Why does Mrs. Eddy say it's a divine infinite calculus and doesn't explain what that calculus is? So it took him quite a while until finally something dawned on him, that the calculus is actually an operation. In order to have a calculus, you need operations. So he could see, well, the 7 days of creation and the 7 synonymous term were not showing an operation. They were only showing and revealing the nature of God, but not the operational sense of God. And so he was feeling, well, there must be an operational sense of God. And that led again, after a certain time, to the point where he began to see the operational sense, which we have today as Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science, because he began to be interested in the chapter on the Apocalypse, and there he came to the end of the textbook with the climax of the textbook showing the Holy City. That Holy City has four equal sides, and those four equal sides, Mrs. Eddy explains, as Word, Christ, Christianity, and Science. And so you could see that this is the operational sense, that that the nature of God operates either as Word, or then as Christ, or then as Christianity, or then as Science. And so he had the first approach to the operational sense, to the calculus, therefore to the second category of being. The first category of being was the order of the seven synonymous term, not the order, the statement of the seven synonymous terms showing the nature of God. And now he began to see the operation of that nature of God through the Holy City. He could see what is going on, namely that always, from a divine standpoint, you first have the word of revelation. That is the very first thing. So seven synonymous terms had been revealed to Mrs. Eddy. Then it had been revealed through the analysis of the seven synonymous terms that John Dawley did. The Christ takes that revelation and translates it. The Christ is translation. Then the third side of Christianity is demonstration. You translate it for the purpose, for an effect, for an outcome, for a demonstration. And that the fourth side is interpretation. You interpret the first, second, and third side so that you can understand it, so that that goes back to the word. You understand the word even better. And that word has a translation and a demonstration, and you have to interpret it again, and you come back again further to the word. And so he began to see that those four sides really were not in a line, but they were in a square, the city four square, where really the fourth side touched the first side, and therefore there gave a sense of that operational sense, which afterwards we would call the cybernetic law. But at that time, we didn't call it that way. He could also see that from a human standpoint, that very fourfold statement of the Holy City had a certain order. Namely, that the word from the human standpoint was seeking, that you have first to seek God before you can understand him. So the first was seeking. When we seek, you have the Christ like finding, something comes to us, that's the Christ coming to us, and we find. And then when we have found it, then comes Christianity in the human, we begin to use it, so Christianity is using it, and then when we use it, we feel we are it, that's the fourth side, the being. So seeking, finding, using, being, he would then define in this way, the foresight of the Holy City from the standpoint of the human.